At any rate, let's turn in the book of Hebrews today to the 13th chapter. This is going to be our last in this series, the name above all names, looking through this great book of Hebrews at all of these wonderful ways that the writer depicts for us who Jesus is. And today we're in that 13th chapter, and we're looking, beginning in the 9th verse. The words will be on the screen, but if you have it in your Bible, it's always great to have that open before you. Chapter 13, beginning in verse 9. And he says this, "Do not be carried away by all kinds of strange teachings, for it is well for the heart to be strengthened by grace, not by regulations about food, which have not benefited those who observe them. We have an altar from which those who officiate in the tent have no right to eat. For the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest as a sacrifice for sin are burned outside the camp. Therefore, Jesus also suffered outside the city gate in order to sanctify the people by his own blood. Let us then go to him outside the camp and bear the abuse he endured. For here we have no lasting city, but we are looking for the city that is to come. Through him, then, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of our lips that confess his name. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God." And this is the word of God today for the people of God. Thanks be to God today. Well, on the playground at my elementary school growing up, there were lots of activities like most elementary school playgrounds, but at my elementary playground, there was really only one thing to do. Recess came, and that meant it was time for basketball. Now, some of you in here I know are basketball fans, and you might not agree with this statement, but I am convinced that I grew up in the golden age of basketball. There has never been an era of professional basketball like the one that I grew up in, all right? Because think about it. I mean, you had Larry Bird, right? Remember Larry Bird? That guy could do amazing things for a white guy. It was amazing. I mean, he was as white as me. You know, I mean, just as pale can be. And I mean, that guy just dominated on the floor. And then on the other side, you had Magic Johnson, and you had the Showtime Lakers. Was there a better show in basketball than Showtime Lakers? You know what I'm talking about? I mean, Magic, man, he could just deal the ball anywhere and everywhere, and you just never knew where that pass was coming from. He was so much fun to watch. But then, of course, even on top of that, if that wasn't enough, you have the undisputed greatest player of all time in the history of basketball, Michael Jordan. All right? No debate here. Don't be saying LeBron to me. I don't want to hear it. Don't say Kevin Durant. MJ is the greatest basketball player of all time. And for those of us who were alive to see it, I mean, I feel so bad for kids today who watch basketball and who think what they watch today is basketball. I mean, I love Steph Curry. It's fun and exciting. Somehow he made the three ball cool. You know, he made being short and agile and shooting from the perimeter, he made that cool. That's all fine and good, but come on now. Basketball was, man, it was inside the paint. It was getting roughed up. It was dominating, and it was taking it to the hole, the slam dunk. It was exciting stuff to watch, and no one could do it like Michael Jordan. You might remember growing up, the era I grew up in, everyone wanted to be like Mike, right? That was the way that they did the commercials, and I tell you, that was my friends and I. We wanted to be like Michael Jordan. And so every recess, there we were. We were on that basketball court from the moment the first bell until the last second before we were going to get a tardy. We were on that court, and we were doing our best impersonations of MJ. You know, we got our tongues hanging out, right? And somehow in our minds, we just We just think we're going to fly through the air just like Michael Jordan. We're going to jump from the free throw line, and we're just going to glide through the air, and we're going to get to slam dunk that ball just like MJ. Of course, you know, having only a 6-foot rim was pretty helpful. But it didn't matter, you know, because when we were younger, I mean, that rim might as well have been 10 foot in the air, right? I mean, it was just out of reach. But it was interesting, you know, as we grew from first to second to third, and as we aged up and grew a little bit, all of a sudden that rim somehow just kept getting a little closer and a little closer, where the reality of actually getting to slam dunk that basketball was finally something that we thought, hey, we actually might be able to do this. And by fifth grade, you know, we kept working at it, and every year someone would get a little closer and a little closer. And by fifth grade, our last year at the school, everyone in my group, all of us that went out there and we played basketball, everyone had grown enough and could jump high enough that they got to slam dunk that basketball. Everyone except for me. And it was sad for me. I didn't like being the only one who couldn't do it. All of my friends, they had no trouble. But me, I mean, I worked so hard. I thought, man, I got to jump higher, and I got to run faster, and I would work at it, and I would try. They'd go, and they'd play a game, and I'd be at the other end, just trying. And every recess, it was, this is going to be the one, and I'm going to get it, and no. I mean, the year wore on, and there we got to the end of the school year. This is the fifth grade year. Everyone in my group, they had the rite of passage. They did the impossible feat. They slam dunked a basketball, and I was the only one. And we're getting towards the end of the year. I wasn't even close, y'all. I mean, it just was not going to happen. I mean, at that point, I thought, I'm going to have to wait till like ninth grade and come back here to like catch up. I don't know what's going to happen here. And it got to be the last day of school. Fifth grade, we're fixing to graduate out. We're going to go on to middle school. And all of my friends took pity on me. And they all gathered around, and they hoisted me up in the air and had to carry me to that ever so high 6-foot rim so that I too could slam dunk that basketball. But you know, in my fifth grade mind, that made it even worse. That just highlighted the fact that here I am, odd man out, you know? And nobody likes to be the odd man out. It's just not a feeling that anyone is seeking after. Right? Deep within us, there is this innate desire. Every one of us, no matter who you are and how strong or independent or self-sufficient you may think you are, all of us have within us this innate desire to have a place where we belong. We want to fit. We want to be a part of the community. We want to be hemmed in. None of us want to be on the outside looking in. But in a world as diverse as ours, with people of so many different backgrounds and skill sets and different ideas and thinking, it's just true to reason that somewhere there is just always going to be a time where there's places, there's circumstances, there's instances where we just don't quite fit. You know what I mean? And for those of us who are followers of Jesus today, I imagine that you, like I do, probably find that a lot of those occasions arise because of your faith. See, there's something about being a follower of Jesus in today's world that not quite fitting in, being the odd man out, can sometimes just be a little bit par for the course. Now, I want you to hear me this morning, because I for one, don't think it's as bad as some people make it out to be. You know, you hear some people, some Christians, they talk about the way that the world is going, and to me they just seem to want to play the martyr card, you know, act like the world is just so against us and has no has no place for us, and they just are making it hard on us. Some people have in their minds that it has never been harder than it is today to be a Christian. Well, sometimes I think we might forget about all of the opportunities that we have as people of faith in the world that we live in today. Sometimes I think we might forget that maybe the world doesn't need us as much as we would like them to, but that doesn't, I mean, we haven't faced the hostility that they're facing in other countries. You know, it's no one's made it illegal for us to be people of faith yet. Just some people can, it feels like they can push that a little bit too far. Now, I do understand that the world is now post-Christian. And if you're not familiar with that term, let me help you with that a little bit this morning. It's a way that's becoming very common for the church to talk about the way the world has kind of moved itself to be, and that in today's age, we've just reached this place where Christianity is just not as dominant as it used to be, right? We used to live in a world, and I'm talking relatively worldwide, at least in the Western world, where Christianity sort of dominated culture, where we had a seat at the table, where we had a lot of influence and a lot of sway over the way that things are, over the way that people thought. I mean, it was not that long ago in history where the church and the governments of nations were linked and synced, where to be a citizen of a nation was also to be Christian, because there were such things as quote unquote Christian nations. Now that is definitely not as good as it sounds. Let me tell you what. History has proven that to be a Christian nation does not always work as good as we would think it would. It might, but that does not change the fact that secular thinking and kind of thinking that distances itself from the church has continued to dominate and roll on, so much so that the church is not as influential as it used to be. The world is not listening to the church the way that it used to. It's not interested in what we think about the way that the contemporary issues or decisions are being made. It's not interested in our values or in the way that we see things the way that we think they ought to be. It's post-Christian. They aren't interested in the role of the church influencing and shaping society the way that they once were. It is a more secular society. But hear me on this. This is the most important part of, at least this part of the sermon. Just because that's the way the world is does not mean we should despair. Hear me. The Church of Jesus Christ has been through tougher times than these folks. Way tougher. The Church of Jesus Christ has survived way more challenging times than these. And it didn't just survive, folks. It thrived. It grew. It expanded. God is still on the throne. And I don't care if we're the only ones in the whole world that are going to believe that. The fact doesn't change, does it? The fact doesn't change. God is on the throne. And here's the good news. If God is on the throne, then people can think and do and believe what they want, and society can do and think and move in the ways that it wants. It does not change the fact that God is the one who has its hand on it, and that God will ultimately have God's way. We can't forget that. To give into despair is to give up. It's to lose faith. It is to give up the hope that we have in Christ. But be that as it may, it does not change the fact that because the world is more and more secular and there's really no end in sight, and because the world seems to have less and less need for the church, and there again, there's not really necessarily an end in sight, It does put us in a kind of peculiar situation because on one hand, we live in this world and have to function in this world, but on the other hand, we are people of faith and let faith be our guide, or at least we should be if we're followers of the faith. And if the world is going this direction and faith is telling us to go to this direction, there are inevitably going to be times and situations where those two things are going to run against each other and run at odds with one another. And we will be forced into times and circumstances where a decision has to be made. And sometimes, folks, these are important life decisions. Decisions that could have financial repercussions. Decisions that could have social repercussions in terms of how we are received in our community. How our friends think of us and welcome us into their community, how we fit and act and we are in society. These have ramifications that have effects on our lives, and we are forced into a situation where we just have to choose. Are we going to be in, or do we have to be that odd man out again? And in many ways, that's exactly what the writer of Hebrews here in chapter 13 wants to address. Because here he's writing to Jewish Christians, people who are followers of Jesus, living in a secularized society and living in and amongst a culture that is not the culture of the church. The world is thinking what it wants to think, and other faiths are thinking what they want to think. And here is this little group of Christians trying to thrive and survive in this multidimensional world that has all these other different influences and dominant cultures and dominant ways of thinking. And Paul writes to them, and he's, or the writer of Hebrews, we don't know if it's Paul, probably not, but he writes to them and he says to them, listen, there's all these strange teachings. There's all these different ways of life, all these different influences telling us how we should think, how we should live, what we should do, what's important, what we should value. And he says, listen, those teachings, if we give too much ear to them, they have this capacity to carry us away. How could that be? Could it be that if we want so desperately to belong and to fit in, to have our place, to not upset or disrupt the status quo, couldn't it very well be that we are forced into those situations where we're having to make those kinds of choices, where it's going to be one or it's going to be the other? And see, the writer of Hebrews recognizes, folks, that's not as easy as we'd like to make it out to be. It's easy for us to be here today and say, I know what I choose. But in that moment, when it's on the line, when the decision has to be made, sometimes it becomes a little bit more complicated. Because guess what? It might be easy just to say, well, listen, I don't have to push the envelope quite so hard here, right? You know what I'm talking about. Maybe I can renegotiate on a few of these things, or come on, I can just let things go. I don't need to make a big stink or make an issue out of this thing, or I don't want to disrupt what's going on here, or I'm the only one and I'm in the minority, and so I don't want to cause this to be a big mess or cause a scene or a situation. I'll just let that pass by. And so we so easily just start letting those rules of society, the way that people kind of function, the way that it is to just kind of be a part, we just kind of go along because we don't want to be the one who has to stand out on the outside looking in, who has to be the person who's going to be the odd man out. And see, the writer of Hebrews, he's clear on this point because he says, listen, folks, we draw our strength from grace, not from regulations. See, the world, they have their rules. They have their ways of doing things. The world will be the world. And it's up to us to be the church. And the second that we decide to be the world and obey its rules and its regulations and go along with its ways of thinking that somehow we're making it easier, well, really, we're just making it harder on ourselves. Because what we are inevitably doing is we are cutting ourselves off from the very source of strength that we have in Christ. It's grace that sustains us. It's not meeting rules and regulations. Rules can only get you so far, and it's never to where you actually want to be. And he says that. They got all these rules and regulations, and guess what? There's not really any benefit they're gaining from it. They're keeping these rules, they're living their way, and it's not doing anything for them. But folks, we rely on grace. And he says, we have a different altar from which we draw on, an altar they don't know anything about. And that is the altar. The metaphor he's pointing us to here is the same one he's talked about in chapter 9 and 10, talking about the sacrificial altar of Judaism, the altar upon which the sacrifice for the Day of Atonement would be offered and given. But the one that Jesus now supersedes as that once and for all sacrifice. And he says, hey, remember on the Days of Atonement, because again, he's writing to Jewish Christians, folks who grew up in the Jewish tradition but who have become followers of Jesus. And he says, hey, remember that on that Day of Atonement, that the high priest, he took the animal outside the camp to be burned and then brought the blood back in for the ritual of the Day of Atonement. And he says, likewise, it is with Jesus. Because what do we see with Jesus? He was marched right through the city, right out through the city gates to stand on the outside, to march up that hill and to offer his life and his blood to sanctify believers, the sacrifice for sins. But see, here's the deal about Jesus, folks. See, the cross is not the only place in the life of Jesus where we see the cruciform way of life. See, as much as Jesus' death and resurrection was sacrificial, the once-for-all sacrifice for sins, his life was equally sacrificial. Because what were they saying about Jesus while he was still alive and ministering? Well, that guy, he hangs out with sinners and tax collectors. What's the matter with him? Right? I mean, that guy's a glutton. That guy, he's hanging out with Zacchaeus. Doesn't he know who Zacchaeus is? Wait a second, he'd meet Mary at the well? Doesn't he know what she's done? Wait a second, look at the disciples this guy chose. These are ordinary men. These are rough fishermen type. These are not the kinds of guys that you would choose to hang out with. What's the matter with him? Wait a second. You're healing on the Sabbath day. Don't you know the way we do things? That's not the way it's done. See, we think Jesus was just carried to the outside when he went to offer his life as a sacrifice. His whole life was lived as the odd man out. He stood as a testament that there is another way, that it's okay to stand on the outside of the city, to be ostracized or to go to the margins of the way that things are, because his very life was a testimony that the way things are is not the way things are supposed to be. And so how could he keep up the status quo, do things the way they're supposed to be done, if his life was a testimony to something else entirely? See, I believe Jesus chose the identity of the outsider. I believe that Jesus stood firmly in the identity of the outsider. I believe that Jesus recognized his role, his mission, his purpose, called him to go to the outside of the city, that he couldn't fit in entirely if he was to do the work he was called to do. It reminds me a lot of Rich Mullins, of all people. I don't know that that's a name that you're familiar with. But Rich Mullins was, he was a songwriter in the Christian worship genre in the late 70s and early 80s. Most Christian worship that we have today that is, falls under contemporary or modern worship, and whether you like it, love it, hate it, in between, it is what it is, and we have it. And Rich Mullins was a huge part of kind of beginning that work. And most modern day artists look back and say, boy, Rich Mullins had a huge impact and influence on my life and the ministry I'm now doing in writing songs for the church for worship. But Rich Mullins, he was a weird cat. I kind of liken him to a modern day John the Baptist, because Rich Mullins had long hair, and he wore what looked to be kind of Native American style clothing a lot. I mean, sometimes, you know, it looked like he probably didn't shower all that regularly. I don't know, he was just like the sore thumb kind of guy in a group, you know. He just stood out. Because, I mean, it's so weird, right? Here this guy was, and he was writing songs that in a record label industry were huge and were popular, and he was receiving a lot of income off of this and doing quite well for himself in financial ways. And here he was this guy dressed like a hobo. And he actually he lived in a trailer out in the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma. I mean, he just was kind of this off the grid, kind of crazy, strange cat. And I love his band was called the Ragamuffin Band, because that's really the way that he saw himself. But see, the issue for Rich Mullins is that Rich didn't see that it was right or good that somehow he should live a life of luxury, that somehow his life should just be frivolous and well off the way that he saw so many other people in the Christian record label industry living, thinking that somehow he was to benefit off of this ministry that he was to give for the sake of the church. And so for Rich, the only right thing to do for him was he would take a very small stipend of all of this money that he earned, a very small piece to sustain a very humble way of life, a lot more humble than you or I would ever dare to want to live. Not luxurious and not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but he would take a very small piece to survive, and he would donate the rest to Christian charities. Hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, this man was giving away because he didn't see the system was right. And he chose, rather than just being a part of the system, he wanted to stand as a testimony that there's a better way. See, he was the outsider. And Hebrews really tells us that that's kind of who we are all so supposed to be in our own way, right? Because he says, here we find Jesus, and he's taken outside the city to offer up his life, willingly to suffer and to lay down his life. That's where we should be. Let's all go out of the city. Because quite frankly, and he says it well, this city really isn't the one in which we belong at all, is it? I mean, we live here, but this is not the city we're hoping for. This is not the place our ultimate destination, our ultimate residence is supposed to be. There is another city, a more lasting city, the true city that we're all really looking ahead to. And that's the city we're looking for. And so if we're here in the city, well, we're going to get too comfortable and it's going to get too easy to just kind of accept this is where we are and where we're supposed to be. And we're going to forget to look and watch for the cities to come. So we need to get ourselves outside of the city, out to the place where we find Jesus to be. Out with the outsiders. Out in the margins. Out of the status quo, but amongst the people who for a whole number of reasons find themselves also to be outside of the city. Even if they're inside, they're outside. Because here's the thing, I think Jesus loved being an outsider most of all because that meant Jesus could be with the outsiders. And if you're anything like me, then that's something to thank God for, because you were an outsider. Because we all in our own way are outsiders. And if it wasn't for the grace of God to reach down and notice an outsider like you and like me, well, we'd be utterly lost. And this is why I think the writer of the Hebrews puts so much focus and attention in chapter 13 on issues like doing good for others and issues of hospitality. In fact, he finishes there in verse 16 talking about how important it is that we do not forsake doing good for others. And if you jump back up to the beginning of verse 1, he begins with this call to hospitality, to visit those who are in prison, the people who are at the margins, the people who are the oppressed, the people who are on the outside looking in. Those are the places and the people to whom we belong, because that's exactly who Jesus was and is for us. So we have a holy work to do, church. You know, it's interesting to me, this word hospitality. I know we have a kind of a common way of thinking about it. That's, you know, opening our homes or providing a very inviting space. I think that there's a whole hospitality industry. You know, we've commodified hospitality, which is not what Jesus was talking about at all. But this word hospitality, did you know what etymology is? Some of you have probably heard that word before. That's literally the study of words. That's all that means. And so if you go back to the original language from which we derive words, you can actually begin to parse out and understand the literal meaning of words by studying where the words themselves come from. Like, you know, vacuum. Where did vacuum come from? Who was the first person that thought, I'm going to call that a vacuum? Well, if you did an etymological study on the word vacuum and figured out where it came from and what words kind of came together to make up the word vacuum, then you'd know. I don't know. But you might be interested and want to figure that out. But I do know about hospitality. And hospitality comes from the Greek word, and I'm not going to pronunciate it because I'll butcher it, but the Greek word was literally two Greek words that came together. And literally, hospitality means this: love of strange. Isn't that awesome? Love of strange. So if you're wondering this morning, God, what should I be doing? I want to be faithful. I want to do what you want me to do. I want to live my faith the way that you would have me to live it. This morning, the call of the gospel is this: go find something strange and love it. Oh, did you say you love me, Pastor? That was epic. That was great. Yes. Find something strange and love it. Thank you for your love. Yes. But think with me just for one more second. Strange and stranger aren't really that far separated, are they? In fact, it's not offensive in any way to call someone a stranger. Oh, look, a stranger. No one would think twice if you called them a stranger. It just literally means in our society, hey, that's someone you haven't met before. But think about what you're calling them for a moment, right? You're kind of strange. You're odd. You're out of place. You don't belong. You don't fit. You're different. Well, I don't know entirely what to make of you because I don't know you. Love that person. And we joke about it a little bit, but we all have our strangeness, our eccentricities. We all have those things. And guess what? The world is full of people that are strange, with their eccentricities, with their differences, with things we don't fully understand, with things that, quite frankly, don't even look the way we look and don't think the way we think. But guess what? We're called to love them too. Hospitality goes a long way towards building the bridges that Christ built to us and calls us as a church to build to the community around us.